On this episode of the Cloud Native Application Flows podcast, we're joined by cloud pioneer James Urquhart. James has been an influential author for many years. His new Flow Architectures book from O'Reilly lays out the landscape for event-driven architectures and the future of our industry. We hope you enjoy this captivating conversation. James, so you've been involved in a lot of the trends that have shaped the industry. You were at Sun prior to Oracle's acquisition. You were at Cisco during the early OpenStack days. And you had a startup that was acquired by Dell. You went to AWS and then field CTO for Pivotal. And now you're at VMware. What is the one piece of technology that you were involved in that didn't break through, but you still think, God, that was the one, you know, that should have been bigger?
My career started in distributed systems in the way that I think everybody's did in the early 90s, which was sort of hacking things together with tech that was available. One of the most successful systems I built at the time was a Smalltalk front end talking to a Fox Pro back end, for instance, for a large enterprise. Nice. So, you know, kind of that fun. But where I really got exposed to scale as a distributed systems problem was at a company called Forte Software in the late 1990s. And Forte was a 4GL development environment to greatly simplify building distributed database-based systems. So, it had the idea of services, named services, and makes it super, super simple to connect to a named service. It had the idea of horizontal scaling. It had failover. A bunch of other technologies that are, you know, sort of considered today kind of the baseline. But back then, if you were trying to scale an application to like even 1,000 concurrent users, it was a huge, huge, huge problem. And so having baseline technologies to do this kind of scaling and stuff, this was all very new to a lot of folks. And I learned a ton from that. And I really think what I will say is, rather than saying it didn't happen and I sit there and think about what would happen, what I will say is the lessons we learned early in doing that 4GL environment for these now considered smallish database applications have stuck with me as still being the basics, the core elements of what works in distributed systems. Independence of components, being very, very careful about dependencies, being very, very concerned about resource consumption and distribution of workloads across resources, being smart in how you architect the system so that it can deploy and scale well and easy and hopefully independently. Although we didn't do too much independent kind of stuff like that, but we did have the ability to deploy, you know, if you wanted to, you could deploy an application that was just a service and then have other applications use that. Really basic things that we learned at the time that were not popularly known at the time. We did batch processing using a pattern that looks not identical to, but looks a hell of a lot like MapReduce, right? Yeah. We did, big things that you see now as sort of being a huge deal were brand new for us. Like I'm trying to think of like something other than events, but certainly it was an event driven approach as well, right? Largely it had APIs to call services, but there was an event bus that was the heart of how each client worked, at least. And you could have them.
Were you finding those patterns on your own or did you have?
Yeah, we had to iterate our way to finding those patterns, right? Yeah. We had to try all kinds of stuff. There were some really good things that helped, right? We knew some of the basic logic about how you want to package things up to go across the network, for instance, right? We knew that one big data blob was a lot more efficient than lots and lots and lots of little tiny data blobs. But at the same time, you wanted to be somewhat async. You didn't want to batch process everything, right? So you had to find that good balance of, well, if you're kind of doing a large transaction with a bunch of information, it's better to collect that information and pass it as one rather than passing it as pieces. And that kind of stuff, then you sit down and you say, well, how do I solve problem X? Well, with that in mind, it would be better to have one service do this than a whole bunch of different services, for instance.
Right.
My slight criticism of the microservices trend, which is the term micro is really, really, really misleading, because the last thing you want to do is create as much network latency as you possibly can so that you can have pendant little components that you deploy
that are super chatty,
that are constantly co-dependent on each other, right? And the same thing goes with functions, by the way. I think one of the things that AWS did with Lambda early on, which is smart, is they basically kind of forced the shape of a Lambda system to be a one-way direction of communication, right? Lambdas right. generally don't call back to other Lambdas that may have been involved in the same conversation. That's necessary. Circular dependencies are a killer. They will be. And you guys must know this better than anybody, Mark, right? This must be one of the biggest problems we're going to see in large-scale event-driven systems when the mass market starts driving them and multiple organizations are involved in a process that we are not seeing today as much with APIs, which is, you know, event A triggers event B at this other company, event B at this other company triggers event C at another company. There's event A again, right? And right, and those kinds of problems are a big deal.
Yeah, and Amazon initially were very tight with what was allowed to be in Lambda, and over time they've loosened it, right? And so right. you can see the large enterprises sinking their hands into it, because they're like, well, that's great and all, but what if I had a 40 gigabyte container? And you're like, and you're like, yeah, don't do that. And they're like, seriously, no, we want to do it. And so, you know, they're going to show up with those things. And so what do you say as the vendor? Like, no, thank you, we don't want your money, or, you know, we'll kick it till it fits.
Right? Let me help you with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the problem, is where we are today is the shape of the systems, the shape of the flow of work in systems is changing right now under our feet, as certainly event-driven technologies, but also the various shapes of serverless mm-hmm. Become more available and more worthy of developers' attention, right? So all the architectures that we would have talked about, including to a certain extent microservices, but certainly all the multi-tier and three-tier multi-tier client-server day architectures we talked about, those shapes aren't really super relevant anymore in terms of how you think about systems. The you're much more in a graph theory kind of world than you are in a stack kind of world. And that to me is one of the big reasons that you're going to see the way people did things, the way people think of things, the way the kinds of systems that are involved in stuff are not going to, they're going to be strange and new even to existing developers, I guess. And we have a lot to learn, which is one of the reasons why, I talk about the book here in a little bit, but the theme that I make in the book, I think it's going to take 10 years from, or maybe 9 at this point. So it's been about a year since the book went out. But, it's going to take significant time for that to be the case, because of all the different problems that have to be solved and all the different learning that the industry has to do over the next decade in order for that to be fact.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like, well, some of the lessons of the cloud and the way that there will be companies, you know, a la Netflix or the like, who the enterprise laggards will, you know, see what they're doing and say, we should be like that. And, you know, they'll be adopting the patterns 3 years late, I guess. But, and then Netflix will continue to put out like, oh, now we do it this way, now we do it that way. But I guess that's just the nature of the beast. But you actually see, I mean, do you think this will become ubiquitous, or will it be just unevenly distributed like the future?
So I want to, before I answer that question, I want to throw out a slight aside that's related, which is it interesting to any of you guys? You've been in the industry for a while. You know, back in the day, enterprises led the way. Right. Back in the day, enterprises adopted the new architectures and the new technologies first, and everybody else was like, oh shit, we should do it like that. It is completely reversed now. I don't think anybody who's coming into the industry or has been in the industry for only like 10 years today could go back to the 90s and recognize it.
Right.
And
right.
Go, oh my God. Like this is crazy. So I think it's always going to be highly distributed and unevenly distributed. And this future, let's just kind of outline the future that we're talking about here really quick, right? So my contention is that the value of event-driven integration, integrating systems in real time across organizational boundaries, the value of that is so exceedingly high that it's going to very quickly lead to people, organizations trying to find common ways to make those connections happen, which is going to lead to standards for interfaces and protocols, which is what happens for over the wire kind of relationships. And so as those standards start to appear and become adopted and become generally agreed to, my argument is then the cost of integration goes down significantly. And when the cost of integration goes down significantly using event-driven stuff, we're talking real-time integration or near real-time, then more and more use cases are going to be found for which it makes sense. And as those more and more use cases are found, it generates more and more event streams that are available, which creates new opportunities for innovation and invention, which again drives more interest. And we're going to end up with what I call the worldwide flow. And I don't use that term to be like, hey, I'm going to invent a term, right? I bounce a million terms off of a million people. All I wanted was a term to describe the large mesh, the unified mesh that we will have around activity that is an analog to the big giant unified mesh we have today around information that is the World Wide Web as we know it. So linked activity in the same way we have linked information in at a massive scale in, you know, where you buy something in one place, you know, another place already knows that, oh, you have an iPhone, here's the app, right? Like, you know, or both a million scary scenarios and a million wonderful scenarios that you can imagine. Things around healthcare, things around education and learning, things around transportation logistics, supply chain, that become really, really amazingly possible and cheap to do, that also change the cost of running distributed systems and running software to support these things, that are going to be driven as these standards, these interface standards and protocol standards, become more firmly defined. And yes, I see that as inevitable that we will have this big giant mesh. Yes, in the same way we saw HTTP crawl its way out in the, you know, into the dot-com bubble and then suddenly explode into becoming, oh my God, everybody's got to be a part of this. How are you going to reach your customers if you don't have a web page, right? Exact same way I see that happening with having appropriate event streams for the ways that you want to communicate with customers, with suppliers, with partners, with regulatory agencies, with. And so from those perspectives, you know, I see the same kind of curve where it'll crawl out. It is crawling today. Yeah. It'll crawl out. At some point in time, some company will start making a ton of money off of the fact that they're doing this.
The Cloud Native Application Flows podcast is brought to you by TriggerMesh. Built on Kubernetes and Knative, the TriggerMesh integration platform helps integrate data, events, and applications across cloud-native and on-premises infrastructures. If you'd like to learn more about the TriggerMesh integration platform, please visit us at TriggerMesh.com. And now, back to the show.
You're already getting like this data flow off of people's patterns. You know, you've had folks like, you know, Facebook and Google are like, hey, we have this massive event source of users and what they're into. And, you know, we can repurpose that in other ways that you hadn't thought of. And then I don't want to get dystopian on it, but, you know, they acquire like credit agencies and, you know, other ways of tracking folks. And they're gathering up all this information and finding ways to monetize it. But, you know, this is not, we're not talking about advertising. We're talking about all the other beneficial things that could be.
Yeah. But there will be crap too. Because, you know, ultimately, you know, this is about the flow of money in business. There, by the way, this is useful not just for money. I mean, there's obviously you could use it for nonprofits and government agencies and things, but really the scary stuff will come from those that see an opportunity to either get a better idea of what they can put in front of you to get you to part with your money, or give a better intelligence of the way of the world to help go to government and lobby and help position things in marketing to help hurt a competitor even. Those things will be there. And unfortunately, you know, we will need regulation and everything to come from that. And I think, you know, I think as slow as regulation around cloud has been, I don't think it's had that kind of direct effect until fairly recently. Like what some of the stuff Apple's doing right now on privacy, for instance, are things that I think are going to get regulatory ears to perk, you know, government ears to perk.
For sure.
I think the event stuff, it'll be a lot sooner. I think, you know, I think frankly, that just the information moving around that fast, governments are going to get a sense of, okay, hold on, you know, our secrets can escape maybe more easily, but also our constituents are not happy with the way their information is clearly being used in real time. And so in certain areas. So anyway, that's kind of the thought. And so, yes, it'll be unevenly distributed because some businesses will glean the value of real time data exchange of that type extremely fast. You already see, I think it's the one of the Australian stock markets is already switching from batch processed reconciliation to event driven reconciliation, as I mm-hmm. understand mm-hmm. it. You know, I think you could see the financial industry making a big leap away from. I talked to somebody once not very long ago, and with the exception of digital currencies, Bitcoin and the like, every single financial transaction you make probably goes through a batch process before it's finally reconciled. You look at that and you say, there's a huge opportunity there to say, well, why? Right. Yeah. And there's all kinds of excuses from the financial industry for why 3-day reconciliation makes sense. And then you dig into it and you realize that
doesn't make sense.
The reason it exists because the technology doesn't let them do it any faster. It isn't, you know, it isn't any of those. Oh yeah. You know, allows for, you know, discovering, you know, fraud easier or any of
right.
Those
right. Things. Yeah. I worked at online banking, around Y2K and, I was quite disturbed at the amount of optical character recognition still involved and batch process. Yeah. Right. And there's no excuse for that, but I'm pretty sure the Perl I wrote in 1999 is still running, right?
Yeah, that's awesome.
There's just, there needs to be a very strong transition away from batch. And, you know, in this day and age, there's just not really a lot of, there's really not a lot of reason to have batch anymore. It's kind of an antiquated idea that, I mean, I'd love for someone to tell me differently, but, you know, everything I saw, you know, and those days could easily be done as streaming today. Just keep accumulating the data somewhere, and you don't have to have this massive buildup of flow. But I think
I mean, certainly there's drawing in old data into new data systems, right? That will always be most efficiently done by some sort of batch process. But when you're talking about transaction syncing and eventual consistency things, right? When you have the batch used for those situations, then I agree with you. Like, it's like, it's increasingly less justifiable to say, let's use free time on a server at night to do a whole bunch of these rather than take them one at a time, because business is becoming more and more 24 hours. You know, if you're more than your Fortune 2000 or larger, you know, you've already got an international business problem.
Yeah. Right? I tried to buy a mutual fund Saturday night, and I'm thinking Tuesday, you know, right around now, it's probably, you know, Tuesday morning, it's going to show up in my bank account, which is kind of unfathomable. You know, you were in a lot of the right spots at the right times. You had your blog series, The Wisdom of Clouds. I actually remember reading that back in 2008 and back in the days. Is there anything from those days that you're like, I missed it? Right. Or, you know, you're like, I didn't think it was going to be this big, or I thought, hey, you know, why didn't IBM take it all? Are there any?
No, certainly not that. Certainly not that. I think IBM made a number of large missteps early on, but I also think it's really, really sad and unfortunate. But I also think that folks like IBM and Oracle and others, they didn't have what it took to do what cloud needed to be at the scale that AWS was pushing.
Right.
So the reason AWS, Microsoft, and Google are the three big US winners is because they already had to run massive data center operations before they even got into the business, right? Mm-hmm. They already knew what it took to start multiple data centers up, make sure that there was WAN connectivity between them that had enough bandwidth to handle what was required. They already knew how to rack and stack massive amounts, you know, in short periods of time. and they had to learn more. It was a bigger scale problem than the problem they had before, but they had that starting point. As much as IBM helped people build data centers, as much as Oracle helped people and, you know, put together large scale data systems at the time, none of them had to run the physical operations at the scale on a constant basis that those other companies had to do. And so, you know, my argument would be the only company that's surprisingly not in the cloud is probably Facebook. But everybody else, because but they don't, they're not interested in that market, right? They're right. Okay, there's big players already. It's not cost effective for them to do it. So you go, okay, Oracle's brute forcing their way in. And I think to their credit, they have a marketing and sales story that some folks are really enjoying and are really bought into, but they're still not running it near the scale that the other three are. No, I think the big thing I'll give you one slightly funny thing, which is like, I go back every once in a while, look at the early posts that I wrote on, you know, the Wisdom of Clouds when it was on my personal blog before I went to CNET. And one of the posts is when DynamoDB got announced, I was like, I don't know what AWS is thinking here. This thing has got no chance. They already have SimpleDB. So why the hell would anybody want to use DynamoDB over SimpleDB?
Yeah, like 130 databases later.
And I'm like, I kind of got that one wrong, I think, just a little bit, just a tad. But there's all kinds of stuff that we anticipated a lot. The group of folks that I was blogging with and exchanging blogs with, you know, we knew who the big players were going to be early on. We knew the structure of what the different types of services that you could call cloud services were going to be. So, you know, infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, software as a service. I think we knew a fair bit about where the momentum was in the market, even as early as 2007, 2008. I think the big things that we probably got wrong to a certain extent were this is something that, you know, I made decisions based on, which is believing very much that, these are the utility, the commoditization of the things that we've always done in computing. Right. Mm-hmm. And then that's where the excitement ended, is like, some new network patterns, but getting networks will be super easy. And I think where you see the real magic starting to happen in cloud, I think, is, again, serverless, some of the low code, no code options out there. Things that we thought would be true 20 years ago, even 30 years ago. I think every 10 years in my 30-year career, every 10 years, there's a batch of visual programming things that pop up out of nowhere, and everybody's pitching, never write a line of code again, just take the pictures and plot them on thing. Those things, you know, have failed consistently for 30 years. Just, they're beautiful. They're really well thought out. They're great design products, but the hassle of this managing software at a scale visually is way, way higher than the hassle of managing it as text. So it always goes back to text. But now I think maybe because we have these services layers that are starting to mature, it might be more reasonable to think of it that way.
So which is the worst name, serverless or low code, no code?
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Which rotted fish do I want to take a bite of? they're both terrible. I think, to be really honest, I hope over time everybody realizes that this is all flow and event-based architectures is really what we're talking about. And it's not it's not about the way you operate it. It's about how quickly and how interestingly you can bring together information to essentially look like a giant, thoughtful system to the people that interact with it, right? So people, you know, ideally what you want, in my opinion, is you want people to feel like, I did this activity. I would expect this other entity to know that I did that activity. Oh, look, they know. I always struggle a little bit to find the one magic story to tell that everybody goes, aha. I mean, even in the book, I'll admit that I struggled with that. But I think if you think of it in terms of just saying, look, I want the world to know what I expect it to know when I expect it to know it. That's sort of the mm-hmm. way to kind of look at that problem set. So low code, no code, you know, it's just basically linking events and linking flows together. Serverless is essentially just giving you a way of processing events without having to, without having to do anything too complicated to focus on that. And so there's a class of applications that applies to each of them, you know, or classes of applications apply to each of them. And I think there'll be others that'll pop up. You know, I think there'll be other ways of doing these things, or low code, no code will splinter into three or four big categories based on something I don't know the space well enough to kind of judge yet, but, so yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it. I mean, to me, it's all ultimately what we're doing is going more and more into a composable architecture overall. Like everything's composable. It's taking time, but as we do those particular technology advancements are key demonstrations of the power of composing things. A lot like when you do piping in the Linux command line, like that small set of utilities that are just built into Linux, you can do a billion super cool things. People do everything from automating devices to automatically finding keywords out of complex documents, things like that, just using sed and awk and, you know, whatever else. I think that's what where we're going. The composable enterprise that was his name, Jonathan. I can't remember his last name, but the gentleman, he used to work at Warner Brothers a while ago, and he did this talk about 12 years ago, 13 years ago, about the composable enterprise. And I think that concept of now more sort of a composable internet or a composable business systems landscape is what we're starting to see evolve.
If Jeff Bezos early on told everyone in Amazon that every department had to have an API and that's how they would communicate, if he was starting today, do you think it would be every department would have an API and a real-time event stream?
Yeah, I would argue that every department should handle requests through an API, and every department should communicate activity through event streams. Absolutely. And by the way, you can't get event streams without an API, right? You can't subscribe to them. You can't subscribe to them. You can't whatever, right? So, so I still think the API represents the interface for somebody who's never communicated with an organization before to now communicate with that organization, right? It's API is still probably the right way to talk about it. But to your point, Mark, I think now Jeff is probably, or, you know, and I wouldn't surprise me if Andy is sort of saying, look, we want to do less and less polling, any of that kind of stuff. We want to make sure we have event streams that could potentially be consumed by Lambda, you know, even internally, even for, you know, except for our very lowest level systems, we should be thinking in terms of what if somebody wants to communicate, consume this data in the future, how can we make sure it's set up in a way that it wouldn't be hard to switch to that? And that gets back to the standards, right? AWS is the only one that isn't really committed to cloud events, the CNCF project, cloud events, that is a really kind of solid spec. It's not the only spec. I've noticed too that they're not very committed either to like async API or any of the other kind of players that seem to have a little bit of a foot in the door. But my belief is that either they're going to introduce something and hope the world takes it on, which will be a failure, or they are kind of behind the scenes. They'll start saying, yeah, you can consume this stuff as cloud events, or, you know, it's super easy for us to take your event bridge output and wrap it in cloud event as a cloud event and send it to wherever you want to send it. And so as that starts to happen, right, that's a big step in the right direction to the rest of it. And I think that goes to what you're saying, Mark, which is, The other thing that, you know, I was at AWS long enough to see that they really kind of run each of these groups almost as their own business units. Not quite, but it's not a bad analogy to run. So really, you know, what they're in part, they're going to sort of say is like, look, if every other business unit here is that's consuming your service is just another customer, then let's make sure that we're communicating in a way that we would eventually want any customer to be able to do.
So you put out a book this year, Flow Architectures, The Future of Streaming and Event-Driven Integration. It's a bit unconventional. It's a little different from some of the other O'Reilly books that are, you know, hey, here's the technology. We're going to talk about it. It's kind of forward thinking. How did that happen?
So the story of how it happened is really fun. When I was at AWS, the systems I was working on were related to their online learning for AWS technology, right? So for AWS services. But the idea at the time was, you know, as with every piece of software that's ever built at AWS, you're kind of looking at it with an eye towards would other customers want to consume this. So I was working on those particular, some sort of next generation ideas they were playing with those particular systems. And it was really fun. When I left, Tim knew that I was working on those systems, and Tim's big focus has always been on online learning from the, you know, before he even did the books. So he sends me an email and he says, hey, why don't you drop by my house and we'll have tea and scones and we can talk a little bit about, you know, what you saw at AWS and, you know, whatever you think that they're thinking about that you can tell me. Basically. And he was very gracious about the fact that he knew that I couldn't talk about everything. So I went over to his house and he has batches of dough ready to go. And he just threw them in the oven and made absolutely fresh scones. I'm trying to remember if he makes his own butter, but he makes his own jams. And so he has a pantry full of hand labeled jars of jams of all these different flavors. And he recommended a couple to me, and it was very surreal. But then we sat down and we talked about online education and, you know, and some of the trends that we were seeing that were very aligned with what he was thinking. And AWS's focus was on AWS. There are other groups at Amazon that look at, you know, teaching the rest of Amazon as well. And so, you know, these are the things that we bring together. And then he sort of said, you know, as we wrapped up the conversation, he said, well, okay, this is all really useful and I appreciate it. What else are you thinking about? What do you got going on? I guess I always enjoyed reading your stuff. What are you thinking about these days? And I said, well, right now I'm obsessed with this idea that if we start having standard, you know, the thesis I talked about earlier, if we start having these standards available, that we're going to have this huge worldwide flow. We're going to have this huge graph of, you know, of organizations connected across each other and a huge amount of economic flow happening through event-driven systems. And he said, you know, I believe that too. And he said, you know, he goes, I think there could be a book here if you're interested. And I was like, well, absolutely. I was like, I was just going to write a bunch of blog posts about it anyway, but let's talk about what it would take to get a book. And what was interesting was the editor that really drove things the hardest at the time, he did the animal books, right? He was sort of primarily focused on that. So he was very much like, hey, can we make this something where it's not just, you know, a business book about this is the future, but hey, here's some of the technologies and some of the other, you know, considerations to make. And I said, well, it's going to be forward thinking. So I'm not going to have solutions to problems, but I'm certainly going to outline the problem space. And I said, the entire reason I would want to write a book, the entire reason I did this was to get the conversation going, right? With I didn't write this book to make money. I didn't write this book to establish myself as the guru on events or anything like that. I wrote it because I saw a huge, huge forward trend that I wanted more of the industry to be talking about very explicitly. And I wanted to give a framework of thinking about it that could be a good starting place. And so there was actually a debate for a short period of time about whether it should be an animal book or in O'Reilly's business imprints. And we went back and forth on it. And in the end, you know, what it came down to is we thought that the primary audience would be a technical audience that was trying to understand what some of the next generation opportunities and big trends were going to be. And because it was a technical audience more so than a business audience, then we decided to go with the animal in print. And so what I ended up doing is writing a book that, you know, that included some chapters on, hey, here's, you know, some of the event-driven concepts you really need to think about. And, you know, here's some ways to think about, you know, what the technologies need to be able to do in order to be, you know, a really useful at scale for the mass of the market. And then I, you know, a giant appendix, which was the most painful thing I've ever written at the end, but really intended to be, what I was hoping with that one was, as people get into that, I wanted them to see the breadth of what was already out there, that the cobblestones are already sort of laid.
Yeah.
And to understand a little bit better about what all the technical nuances were that were out there that, you know, you should be aware of as you're evaluating a technology or a solution that you wanted to bring to bear. So, yeah, so that's the, that's sort of how it happened and sort of where it landed was, and you can tell by the reviews, people are there, you know, most people love it. Thank God. A few people out there just don't get, why is this here? Why is this an animal book? Why doesn't solve anything the for coding? Me, right? Yeah. This just seems like I respect people's opinions on that, that front. It certainly is an unusual book. I certainly didn't expect everybody to sort of glom onto it. I didn't expect it to be, you know, my dream is it's not a massive bestseller in the first 2 years, but all of a sudden becomes a cult book like 3 or 4 years from now, right? That would be like, okay, I did more than than I deserve if that happens.
I definitely know I will be recommending it to, you know, architects and kind of decision makers and organizations who are, you know, trying to frame their own thinking and lead other people towards these sorts of solutions. I mean, a lot of the flow concepts that you describe, you know, they're there, but I think people hadn't, you know, put them down on paper. You know, they didn't recognize that they were part of a bigger context with, you know, hey, the engineering work that's happening here is a source of data for the, you know, the business unit over there. And, you know, if we start thinking about it as flow, maybe we'll stop, you know, trying to build castles and build trains.
Yeah, no, that's actually not a bad, and I like that actually. I like that analogy a lot, right? That's
there are all sorts of analogies you can right. make, right? I mean,
right. No, that's good.
Now, do you think that your audience is more a developer audience or an administrator audience or those enlightened few, the DevOps?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think actually, you know, I'll sort of say that there were three audiences that I was thinking about as I wrote the book. So the first was the developer who is confronted with architectural questions. So I, you know, everybody sort of talks about, oh, the architect. And there are organizations that have architects, but my experience is right now is largely those architects are becoming more and more sort of curators of communication between organizations and organization systems, and less defining this is the technology used to solve this problem, right? Developers have more and more of that. So first thing was, you know, there are developers out there who are probably thinking about, you know, how do I handle this integration problem? And you could go the Boomi route, right? You could go an ESB route and open that up or somehow something. There's all kinds of wacky stuff you can do integration. But in reality, in the long term, you want to do something that's aligned with where you're going to be able to take that work and make it more and more valuable over time rather than have it go obsolete completely. And so that was the first one. The second one was the engineering manager who is confronted with the problem of, how do I inspire developers to move forward and innovate? So maybe it's flow, maybe it's not. But I was hoping to get some folks to read this and go, you know, my team needs to understand and think about this. We need to have a debate about this and have an understanding about what's going on. So some of the business value and stuff is in there. It's less so for the CEO audience. And more so maybe for the CIO, certainly for the VP of applications kind of audience. And then the last one was the VC slash entrepreneur who's looking for, you know, where can I get ahead of the curve a little bit? And I really think right now, the great thing about it is, to me, with the analysis I did in the book, I'm very, very comfortable in saying, I don't know what the exact shape of this thing is going to be when it happens 10 years from now, but something like this is going to happen, right? Something that we look back and we say, yeah. So this is how this commodified, this is how this became a standard, right? So the question really becomes, you know, how do you monetize that? And, or how do you hook onto the train to realize value from the market as it grows? And so there's an awful lot that I wrote in there as well about, these are problems that need to be solved. Absolutely, I believe this is going to happen. Absolutely, these are the benefits that I see are going to happen, how it, you know, meets the needs that, you know, I went through several polls taken over the last 3 or 4 years about, you know, what drives digital transformation, what drives software development in organizations, and sort of very carefully sort of saying, these are the ways in which an event-driven system is going to address these better than a lot of other systems potentially are. But that VCI, you know, I would love to see some real innovation come out of this as well by organizations who sort of say, yeah, I get it. And, oh man, look at this problem. This is going to be huge. Let me see if I can, you know, figure out a way to solve the problem while, when there's a market, not before.
Right? Yeah. We're definitely thinking along the same lines. It's just, it's a big problem space. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how do you get people to wrap their minds around, you know, this is where we're headed, and you know, we're, at least here at Trigger Mesh, we're trying.
No, and I think
trying to introduce things that make it easier to rationalize, you know, integrations. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, it's definitely a big space.
Yeah, it'd be interesting too. One of the things I really like about Trigger Mesh is the understanding early on that this wasn't just another bus problem per se. That this is a sort of more of a systems problem in general, and an integration problem from the perspective of, some things you're going to integrate are going to be very much in your control and other things may not be. It's going to be interesting to see the length to which the solution here goes from being plugins to being, you know, a standard interface, that then it's really the capability of the system to manage the massive amount of traffic being passed through those interfaces that becomes the value add and the process. And if I'm right, it'll move that way. If I'm wrong, then a good ecosystem of plugins will be the winner for, you know, decades left to come. But I think that the value I see with Trigger Mesh, or what I've seen Trigger Mesh do a little bit differently than others, most others, is really sort of, again, understanding that idea that we're not trying to solve a bus problem. We're trying to solve this kind of distributed systems problem, which means that this has to be thought of in terms of not one big central bank, but in terms of how things are brought forward. And so I hope, Mark, correct me if I'm not reflecting things correctly, but that's the way I've read the stuff that you've done. And so I think that's the big part where, you know, and I see the other integration players starting to wake up to it a little bit, but they're not natively in this space.
Yeah, yet. I think that you hit on the fact that it's probably not a plug-in play. It's a, you know, way to express integrations that it has some commonality. Sort of where we run into consistently is event streams that are, you know, we don't have to stream the events because they're collecting the events. What we have to do is route, you know, transform, split, and create the, you know, make the, you know, the whole thing is, I think Kafka, they say, puts data in motion. The next thing to do is make that data actionable. And that's really where the integration problem that needs to be solved is, get it to where it needs to be as fast as possible to do, you know, whatever you need to do, whether it's analytics or workflows or data for the sake of data.
Yeah, I love that because I love that. That's exactly great way to put it, because and the problem we're going to have here is there's no lingua franca for either the data or, I mean, the event metadata will start to get standardized, but the payloads are never going to. And so, you know, you almost need a Google Translate for event payloads, right? And you could do that big and centrally somewhere. But I think, and this is a blog post I wrote not very long ago that I'll hopefully we'll get you guys to share the link on. There's a great book by one of the members of the Santa Fe Institute on scale, and he talks about how distributed systems, how complex adaptive systems that have resources that have to flow to the different agents in the system, how they all seem to evolve in very, very similar ways. And so you have the trunk, branch, leaf, limb, right? That kind of model. So the way your body passes blood and oxygen around, the way highway systems evolve in cities to move goods and services and even people around the city, how airports have evolved, how, you know, just any number of biological, economic, physical systems have evolved. And it's that same sort of, you know, central flow, but really everything kind of breaks down and distributes, you know, locally where locally can happen, nodes in the middle to help kind of handle more regional level stuff. So I think that's, you know, one big area of this is you can't handle the problems you mentioned, Mark, in sort of a big central approach. It is an edge computing problem, but not edge computing in the, oh, we want to push everything to the edge way either. It is, let's put the right factors of computing where we need them to be most efficiently. Let's give the developers and the operators the options about where and how they kind of place and run things. And ultimately, we'll find the right solution. We'll find the right solution of hardware, of kind of where translation has to happen, what needs to be translated when, all that kind of stuff. And also what needs to be archived when, what needs to be broadcast bigger when, you know, all kinds of problems like that. And so that flow, that flow shape is really, you know, in large part at the heart of how this stuff is going to kind of pull together. It's why Amazon, Microsoft, and Google are going to be major, major players in this market. It doesn't matter what we want. It is the truth. But at the same time, they can't possibly own the entire market. They can't possibly lock the entire thing down. There have to be some things that are going to be very new and innovative and inventive that have to happen outside of the core cloud. And that also just has to be the way that it is.
Yeah. I mean, in the book, you talk about the Wardley flow value chain, mm-hmm. you know, about how to think about this problem, how to find your way. And as I was reading that, I was like, that's what we're doing. I mean, obviously, you know, we want to be the company you're thinking of, but just talking about things like the standards game and co-creation and, you know, network effects is like by focusing on Kubernetes, which is, you know, a standard, and embracing open source and, you know, trying to build up an ecosystem around these patterns, it's like that's how we're trying to help establish the new standards for, you know, how you manage event integrations.
Yeah.
You know, obviously we got our work cut out for us and we're not the only ones, but it definitely made me feel like we were
on the right certainly path. Nor do you want to be the only ones, in my opinion. You certainly want this to be a market because there are aspects that you may not be able to get to or don't want to get to that somebody else should pick up at the very least, right? There are aspects of, you know, let's say certain regulatory handling of certain events that there's a great business out there for somebody, right? And it doesn't have to be you guys. And in the same way with Amazon, I mean, they make a play at sort of like, we want to own the edge, we want to own, you know, all of this stuff running in AWS. And there'll be some folks that kind of buy into that, I think, as long as they have a well encapsulated and scoped problem that doesn't have a lot of data leakage out of it. But for the rest of the world, which is, I think, in my opinion, most of us, like we want to be more integrated, not less integrated. And so in that situation, then we need the freedom of being able to compose the solution that we need out of all the building blocks that are available in the marketplace, because we don't even get to choose all the building blocks. Some of those building blocks have been chosen right. for us by the partner or by the supplier or whatever. And so it just has to be that free, almost like passing ASCII between Linux command line items or Linux commands. It's just, it has to be that easy to sort of begin to say, okay, I'm just going to send this stream over there. It's got the following properties. They know how to handle a stream of those properties. Great. Or, you know, I'm going to subscribe, more likely I'm going to subscribe to the stream that's available to me. And it's just got to be that easy. It's just, you know, there's been a few people who I've seen on Twitter kind of waking up to, oh man, like, could you imagine? And here's the funny thing. We go back to Forte Software, right? Back at Forte, we were like, yeah, we never ever had to program how information real time or not, you know, event or API information was passed. Like, we never ever had to write that code, that glue to make it happen. We just said, oh, service name dot method name. Boom. And the, hey, it happened. The information, the call was made. And then, you know, so we're hoping it's, you know, my belief is we're sort of getting back to that space where it gets so easy that you just sort of say, oh, I just want to consume this weather stream. Here's the URI of whatever form it is for the weather stream. And boom, now I'm starting to receive that data in a way that I can consume and process it. So there's a lot of interesting things. There's some innovations already starting to happen in terms of how you would make those connections. Derek Collison, I was very, very lucky that Derek Collison was one of the technical advisors on the book. If anything has happened in the messaging/eventing world, he's seen it and experienced it already.
Right.
And Derek was very, very helpful in sort of pointing out a number of the things that are true about this space that should be considered and have to be taken into account to make solutions happen. So, you know, the core of it is the systems that we build, that composability is really important. And so how does an enterprise become more composable in the way they distribute that? Well, one thing is they need the right infrastructure to support being able to package and ship data and also understand how that communication is happening. They need the right, and so that's where something like Trigger Mesh to me comes into play, and VMware Tanzu's role and sort of the processing piece of it. Those pieces coming together, I think you're going to want some standardized engines in which to run all this stuff, but you don't want to do it in such a way that, like we did try to do with the ESBs, where we tried to centralize everything so the IT could control it. We need those building blocks. And I think where you guys as vendors and where we as vendors are trying very hard then to sort of say, okay, let's get away from the you must do it in our world with our opinion way to a much more composable view of how things happen.
And in your role as a field CTO for VMware, are customers responsive to that? I mean, are they like, you know, yes, you know, I want to go on this path, or they're like, yeah, maybe someday?
Well, if they have had messaging and eventing problems before, it's like, oh yeah, this would make my life so much easier if I didn't have to, you know, put these libraries in and write code in order to use the libraries and all this stuff. I find that developers are very interested in sort of pushing the ball forward. I find platform teams are increasingly like, okay, you know, our job is to offer a service that makes developers' lives as easy as possible. So if some eventing infrastructure is required, I mean, more and more platform teams are owning things like the messaging infrastructure and the database infrastructure, right? Those are becoming more and more thought of as platform pieces rather than infrastructure pieces or application pieces. And so, you know, I expect to see eventing infrastructure very much being something that is a set of services that they make available to developers to consume. So it's early yet, but certainly event driven is exploding a little bit right now, but I think it's mostly internally within apps, right? Event driven microservices seems to be the number one theme around event driven right now, right? But my hope is that event driven integration is 2 years away from exploding at the same kind of level. We'll see. It's weird because I don't think a lot of organizations think of receiving data in real time as an integration problem, which is weird. They see API, they get APIs now. I think along 8 to 10 years of trying to convince the industry they need APIs as a kind of formal mechanism has kind of come to fruition. They get APIs. Okay, you call an API. I get it. So where's the documentation? Okay, cool. So whenever I need this, I call the API. I think understanding how to process streams is sort of where we are now, is sort of starting to grow out of being the leaders and getting into more of the mainstream. And as we understand that, and as we better understand the different types of stream processing that can happen, different infrastructures you can use for different purposes, then I think the usefulness for integration is not going to take long for everybody to go, oh, whoa, like now that I have this working, can I just send this to my supplier and, you know, and not have, you know, have to fill out their forms, but have them just consume this data that's kind of readily provided for that purpose. So that's why I think the explosion will happen, you know, at some point in time. But I think if you can't process events, event-driven integration makes no sense whatsoever. Right. It just, you can't make it actionable. You can't make the event valuable unless you can process it. And I think a lot of organizations are stuck in the, oh, it's all Kafka phase. And in my opinion, that's a temporary state for us to be in. It's not that Kafka's bad. I think I in the book, in the fifth chapter in the book, which is where I go over some of the technical things you can think of today, I have a decision tree in there of, you know, how you can decide which technologies should you use for different event-driven processing purposes. And you know, Kafka has a major role to play in certain types of stream processing. If you know Kafka super well and you have no idea what swim.ai is, then I don't think you're yet at the point where you really understand event-driven processing. And so until we get more of a situation where people go, oh, that's a Kafka problem versus that's a swim problem versus that's a, step functions, AWS step functions problem, whatever. Until we get to that point, I don't think the integration side will, there'll be business there. You know, but it won't explode in the way I'm talking about it in the book.
I did find that taxonomy useful in my own thinking about, you know, how to position different technologies. Mm-hmm. You know, what to use where, and I guess who's competing with who.
Yeah, and I have an update. I have a blog post where I updated that flowchart slightly because I had one problem with kind of lumping swim in with I think with Lambda or whatever I lumped it in with. And so I make one more clarification about one versus the other, model-based versus individual event-based, I think, to a certain extent. There's going to be this variety of technology that's out there, which is exactly the way it should be if you're trying to move to composable. It just makes it more difficult for you to know the landscape super well, right? If you look at the famous CNCF poster of what the CNCF is made up of, right? And you go, okay, there's no way anybody can know all of it. But people know a huge number of Linux command capabilities and use documentation to look up the rest all the time. I think a similar experience to me seems to be likely what's going to happen in the future, which is like you'll know a bunch of technologies you can bring to bear. And then what you don't know, you have a problem set you've never seen before, then thank God for the internet. Yeah. And the ability to kind of hunt that down.
Well, we'll be sure to use your book as a reference going forward. So definitely appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
This has been great. I've definitely enjoyed our conversation. But where can people learn more about your book and follow up with questions for you?
Yeah, the easiest place to find me and any kind of the commentary that I make about the book over time is on Twitter, where I'm just James Urquhart, my first name, last name. Took a little hiatus to go on vacation, but certainly I plan to do a lot more kind of commentary on what I'm seeing out there. The book is available on O'Reilly. If you have an O'Reilly subscription, you can go read it today. And it's just available online. It's also available on Amazon. So again, Flow Architecture is the future of streaming and event-driven integration. I'll be speaking at some conferences and other places as well. So I do have a blog. The blog will be referred to from my Twitter account. It's probably the easiest way to find that as well. I write to learn. That's my kind of my motto. I write to learn. And so if you have a disagreement, if you have an observation, if you have whatever, please reach out to me on Twitter. I would love to hear it. I would love to have the discussion with you. And, you know, even negative criticism of the book has been really, really useful to me. And I welcome all of it.
Thank you very much for coming on the show. We look forward to talking with you again soon. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Matt. Thank you, Mark. And all the best to Trigger Mesh. And I hope to do this again sometime.
Thank you for listening to the Cloud Native Application Flows podcast, brought to you by Trigger Mesh. If you've enjoyed this conversation, please tell a friend and give it a review. We'll be back soon with another episode.